Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Andrea, and you are joining Mindful Shift, a conversation about the evolution of consciousness. And I am very happy to be back today and very excited to be joined by a biologist and teacher of biology and environmental studies at Salzburg University in Maryland, Joan Malouf. She wrote the amazing book, Teaching the Trees, Lessons from the Forest, and I absolutely loved it I was hooked by page 3. This is absolutely wonderful, and we are going to bring her on in just a couple of minutes. So hello, I hope everyone is doing very well out there. We need to start off and take a grounding breath, that always helps me, so join along, and let's give ourselves permission to be here. Let's just take a deep breath in. And let it out. Now we are all grounded together and going to be talking about trees and forests and how they are all networked together. And there are so many parallels to what is going on. If you are in the area in Seattle, there is so much going on. If you are an activist or a spiritualist, I invite you to check it out. We have a lot of social environmental issues going on with major corporations in the Port of Seattle putting in drilling and in the Seattle City Council. Shama Savant is running against another woman opponent. So she is one of the only socialist alternatives in the country, and so that race should be very interesting. Also having some political challenges in the solar industry. So if you're in Washington, I invite you to get more involved in that. There are a lot of states now that is having they're having a lot of luck getting off the grid and relying on petroleum products and using the technology of solar products. And Washington state legislation is actually introducing things that will make it more difficult for solar. So we need to be more proactive, and there are so many solutions out there. It's a great time to be both centered in what you're doing and find something you're really passionate about. And go out in the world and do that. So it has been a while since I have been on the air, but I have been continuing my studies and working still as a volunteer publicist for Professor Pollack. And one of the things that we have been studying is, or we haven't been studying, I have been studying, is Dr. Emoto's work. And Dr. Emoto passed away this last October. And hang on just a second, everybody. I'm going to talk to Joan for just a second. Hey, Joan, it's Andrea Martin. How are you?
Hi, Andrea. I'm
good. Good. So I am on the air, and I was hoping you were going to be calling in soon.
Bye.
All right. Hi, guys. So Andrea's dyslexic. It looks like I probably gave Joan the wrong number. She was trying to call in. So I was just calling her while I was talking about Dr. Emoto's work. But he passed away this last October, and two of his top assistants were recently in Seattle, and they are now making connection with Dr. Pollack, and I had the honor of almost just practically bumping into them at a conference that I didn't think that I was going to be able to go to. So there is so much good news out there. Any of the things that I just talked about, if you just do a Google search, you'll find all kinds of information. So anyway, we have Joan joining us. And as I mentioned, she wrote the amazing book, Teaching the Trees, Lessons from the Forest. The book is really so easy to read as well. And I like to say that because if you want to tackle the subjects of forest, you can look at it from biology or trees, and if you want to talk about spirituality. And this book does such a beautiful job of combining both and right from, as I said at the beginning of the show, from page 3, her writing is so beautiful. It was easy to read from a point that I felt connected from the science point of view as well as her own personal journey. So let's bring her on and let's get started. Hello, Joan. How are you?
Hello, Andrea. I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
Sitting in my office looking out at a tree.
Well, thanks for that. Yes, I am very dyslexic, and I did double checked with that number, but I sometimes double check more when I send phone numbers to make sure that I sent
no
the right
problem.
One.
We connected.
Yes, absolutely. So, welcome, and how are you?
Thank you. I'm well. Well, enjoying this. I'm in Southern California at the moment, enjoying the beautiful weather here.
Oh, good. Yes, I was going to ask because we Facebook friended when I originally invited you on. We Facebook friended, and you have put amazing pictures on Facebook of your travels, and I love the common theme perspective is the view that you see out your bedroom from bed is so cool.
Yeah, that's on my personal Facebook page. I'll wake up in the morning and I'll take a picture of the view from my bed as a way to let my friends and family know where I am in the world now because I travel so much for the Old Growth Forest Network.
Yes, no, you started out in France, I think, one of the first ones I saw, and now I know you ended up in Southern California, and I know I hope to do our. I'm already excited about doing our next interview because I know it's. I'd like to be enthusiastic because I'm starting a YouTube network, and I travel to your neck of the woods very frequently in Southern California. So I'd love to do this again in person, and possibly maybe we can even find a forest to do it in. But bring us up to speed. Tell us how you got interested in this work and how you fell in love with trees.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always loved plants, and it's something that I can't really explain. From the time I was a small child, I remember just being fascinated, even with the lawn in my suburban home, you know, looking for four-leaf clovers and looking at the worms and things that lived in the soil and just being captivated and amazed by the variety of plants that I saw. So when I went to university, I actually studied plants. I had no idea that anybody could study plants because, you know, as I grew up in the regular classrooms, it wasn't really emphasized as a course of study. But then I realized, well, there are people in the world that's their specialty. So studied plants, became an ecologist, and as I looked around at what we had done to the forests on our planet, I just realized that it was not right and something should be done.
And you really put into words something that I haven't been able to articulate with the clear-cutting practice and then the replanting of trees, which actually ends up being a little bit of a myth. We're not replanting forests, we're replanting crops. And your book, each just right from the beginning, explains so beautifully how each tree will have its own unique signature of all of the things that come. So where did you had a spiritual experience with trees, or was this something that you were just born with this connection? Was it an aha moment, or did you always feel and it just sort of grew more and more?
Yes, I always had a connection, although the connection has gotten more energetic, if you will, or spiritual over the years. But even scientifically, as an ecologist, I knew that when you cut a tree down, you're not just removing that one organism, but you're taking away habitat for so many organisms that depend on that tree. And what I saw around me is so many of the native mixed forest where all these different species of trees were creating habitat for many, many, many different kinds of birds and insects and fungi and lichens. And they would be cut really without a thought, and people would be told, oh, don't worry, we'll replant, and this is healthy for the forest, and we'll regrow, well, that saying, don't worry, it's healthy for the forest, what they really mean is that we'll be able to grow more tree fiber. You know, we'll harvest this fiber and we'll grow more. But those organisms that have lost their home with so many of those species won't always be able to re-inhabit the forest that gets planted, because often it's just one or two species that get planted, where it may be 20 species that have been removed. So as an ecologist, I saw this happening directly to the forest around me. One week I would see this native mixed forest, and the next week I'd go through and it would be clear cut. And I thought, you know, somebody should be speaking out, somebody should be doing something, and you look around and you hear a pin drop. You know, nobody's really going to bat for these forests or speaking out for these forests. And then I thought, well, what can a scientist do? What sort of studies could I do to show that this was not a good thing to remove these native forests? And then I realized, and this was kind of an aha moment, that scientists all along have been doing this research showing how important these forests are and these native trees, but somehow it wasn't getting across to the general population who doesn't read those specialized scientific journals. So that's when I thought, well, as a scientist, I could dive into those scientific journals and then tell the stories in a way that the average person could understand and be enlightened by.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. And being generous with you take yourself through this personal journey when you do that. And that really made it, you know, as I said, I was, you know, not... It wasn't an explanation from a chemical point of view, or you know, just purely the facts and statistics about, you know, and the bad news about what companies are doing. It's just really walking people through, you know, all of the beautiful moments also that are possible. One of the ones that stuck out with me the most is that you talk to people and they usually will reveal a special moment or a place or an area. And you say it sometimes even almost frightens people. It can be so either transforming or powerful. I was instantly brought to the forest where I was little. The wildflowers transfixed me. Just every spring, early spring, as the forget-me-nots came up and everything warmed up, it was always magic.
Yeah.
My imagination was limitless when I was little in that. And I'll never forget that.
Yeah. And that's so... With the book, you know, in addition to the science I just explained, okay, I'd go into the journals and pull out the scientific stories, but it's really more than that, because as you just shared, it's the emotion that you feel from the forest, not only the positive, uplifting emotion sometimes, but the emotion that you feel when you see the destruction of the forest too. So that's where I kind of took the step beyond the science and was able to share the emotion that I feel for these forests.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that really reaches people, and so many people have told me that they see a forest differently after reading that book.
Yeah.
And I purposely tried to keep it short, as you said, and tried not to bog anybody down, because I wanted someone to be able to read it in one sitting if they really got drawn in.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's funny the way I want you to say how you get some of your students to, shall we say, embrace the more cultural.
Yes. So
tell me that story.
Okay. So for 20 years, I taught university. I taught biology and environmental studies, and I would teach about the ecology of the forest, you know, and that was the textbook material that everybody's seen. And then we'd go out into a forest, and I'd give the lecture about the different kinds of trees and how the forest functions. And then I would, at some point, as I got bolder as a teacher, older and bolder, I would have a student students say, okay, now find a tree. Now I want you to put your hand against this tree. And I want you to tell me if you can feel life in this tree. Can you feel life energy in this tree? And right there, you know, it's a moment that is kind of going beyond the textbooks. It's like, oh, what does life feel like? What does energy feel like? Can I connect with this tree? Is this tree living? And there was no right or wrong answer. You know, some people can feel it and some people can't. And then sometimes I would say, okay, now I want you to hug your tree. And part of that was so they would never be able to make fun of someone for being a tree hugger.
A tree hugger, yes.
They had the experience, yeah.
Yeah, and you can't unring that bell, can you? You can't undo it.
That's right. That's right. Can't go back.
Yes, because it did become sort of a strange thing culturally that it really became kind of a negative to be very emotionally like, oh my gosh, I am just in love with those trees.
Mm-hmm.
I've always fallen in love with trees by having this view, no matter where I live, I fall in love with the trees by the view they create, and that's kind of how I get to know them. But when I think about what I'm really doing, I am building relationships with, you know, I get to know the way they look and the way they move.
Yeah.
And as the seasons go by, you get, you do fall in love with the way they experience their own life.
Yes, and you'd be heartbroken if one of your favorite trees died or fell over. You know, it's a loss, just like, you know, a pet or a friend or something.
Yes.
You know, for you, in addition to the other organisms that depended on that tree, but of course, you know, they have a lifespan just like we do. You know, they're living organisms.
I thought about you walking a couple of weeks ago. I had the unusual opportunity to walk by the house that when I was taken home from the hospital, we lived there, and was walking by on the day that there was a big tree in the backyard. Of course, I don't remember it very well. We only lived there until I was about six, but there was a big tree in the backyard, and it was enormous now, and there was a tree cutter there, and they were in the middle of what I thought was taking it down, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is so unusual for me to be walking by, and they're taking down that tree.
Yeah.
Well, whatever project I was on, I was going to be walking by a couple of days later, and they actually had given it a new life by pruning it so beautifully that it was now back in level with the house. It was going to be all this summer. It basically is going to be kind of look like it took 30 years or 40 years off of it from when I saw it when I was young.
Yeah, people
I just thought
were
that was so meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's great. People were caring for it. And in my book, Teaching the Trees, I have that chapter called Old Growth Air. Did you read that one?
Oh,
and that's
I visited
an old growth forest and walked into the forest and just, you know, breathed in the smell of that air that was different than the air that I had smelled anywhere else. And I describe how those molecules, not just oxygen given off by tree leaves, but all kinds of other molecules that we breathe in and are taken into our body. And your tree story makes me think of your, you know, coming home as a little infant, and you were probably breathing in some molecules that were given off by those tree leaves. So you're connected in a way more intimately than we tend to imagine.
Mm-hmm. I know, and it's astonishing that that's just one tree in your life. If people sort of kind of bring into their awareness that the trees are they're everywhere and they can speak to us. I have on the show's slide a picture of a face I saw in the tree in the University of Washington quad as it was blooming cherry trees. I just started looking at it and felt really connected to it. And just as if magic, saw eyes and a nose and a smiling face.
Yeah. all kinds of mysteries there. And I had someone else contact me, a woman who was walking through a forest and started feeling very connected. And then a similar story, she saw a face in a tree, and then she realized that she more and more began to see kind of personalities in trees and started photographing this. So there's all different ways that we can be connected.
Well, and that makes complete sense when you think about it isn't just the tree that you're making the connection with, but the insects and the birds and the squirrels and that particular type of squirrel and everything that goes along with it, that moss and the fungi. Talk about the importance of the fungi in the soil. This is groundbreaking medicine.
Oh, yes. We are just beginning to really understand the tip of the iceberg on this one, really, because, you know, it's only been a few decades that we realize how important the fungi in the soil are to providing the tree roots with the minerals and with the water they need. And with every tree that's standing, among its roots are going to be entwined these fungi in the soil that are reaching out far and wide, dissolving things that the tree doesn't even have the enzymes to dissolve that are in the forest. Like, even from rocks, these fungi can dissolve minerals, and then they can carry them back to the tree. And the tree, in turn, is giving the fungi sugars that it makes through photosynthesis. So it's a beautiful web there. But not only is it, you know, one species of fungi, one species of tree, but these mycorrhizal fungi can connect different types of trees in a forest. And the older trees tend to be the most important ones. They're like a hub. And the mycorrhizae are connecting other trees. And so if there are young trees that are in the understory of a forest that aren't getting enough sunlight or enough nutrients, the mycorrhizal fungi can actually carry the nutrients from the older, more successful trees to the younger trees. So a forest's life depends as much on what goes on under the soil level as it does above the soil level. And, you know, we may go into a forest and think, oh, we're just selectively logging, you know, we're taking out this one here and that one here and the other one there. But when we do that, we are disrupting that underground network.
And the whole ripple effect. And you have been, you founded the Old Growth Forest Network.
Yeah.
And you've based that in your Maryland, where you're located?
Yes. my main home is in Maryland. So after that first book, Teaching the Trees and writing about the old growth hair, the question I kept getting over and over again was, how do I get to that forest? I want to see that forest. Can you give me directions to that old growth forest? And I realized that there's a hunger in people to see an untouched forest, and there aren't many of them left. But there are little bits in each state, and so I thought, well, I'll let people know how to get to these places so they can understand what our landscape looked like before we disrupted the forests, or, you know,
what it smells like.
And so that book, Among the Ancients, it's called, I give directions for one old growth forest in each of the 26 eastern states, because so often the eastern old growth gets ignored and everybody's flying to California to see the redwoods, but there's some old, less than 1% left, but there is some old growth in the east. And in my travels, it just became so viscerally real for me how scarce these forests were. And I would drive for hundreds of miles, Andrea, and not see an untouched forest. And I realized that we needed to speak out for the forests remain and let some forests recover. And that's when I went from being in, you know, a school teacher, a university teacher, to a writer, to then starting a nonprofit organization called the Old Growth Forest Network to make sure that there's at least one forest in every county of the U.S. that remains unlogged and open to the public.
Yes.
So that's become
my
life's work. And if you go to the website oldgrowthforest.net, you can see the forest that we already have in the network. We're just 3 years old. We have 40 forests in the network now in 13 different states. And we are going great guns. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, I just added two more last weekend in Northern California.
Any in Washington state?
No, and I would love to have one in Washington State. I know that there's some beautiful old growth forests there, and I've seen it.
Yes, the coast, yeah.
And so with the network, what we do is we depend on a volunteer per county, someone that can say, yes, I will help you find the ideal forest to put in the old growth forest network in my county. And then we work together. We identify the forest. We talk to the management. Then we have a dedication celebration where we add it to the network. So I welcome anyone from Washington, any county, to actually on our website, oldgrowthforest.net, there's a place where you can sign up as a county coordinator, and we can work together.
Oh, yay. Yeah, no, that sounds awesome, because I was also looking that April 22nd, we've got Earth Day coming up,
mm-hmm.
and the goal on that day is 1 billion trees, seeds planted.
Yes, which is a fantastic goal, and I've signed up to be part of that, and I am going to plant a tree, but I just like to remind people that in my mind, preservation is more important than replanting, because I see these older forests being taken down. And then in many cases, people say, oh, it's okay, we're going to replant, but it's not the same forest.
It's not the same. That is actually such an important point, and one for a long time that I was not aware of. The logging and the clear cutting that went on in the Seattle area, I am very close to the foot of the Cascades, you
mm-hmm.
could see it. It looked like a patchwork quilt.
Yes.
And in the 70s, it was getting so bad, and it was like,
mm-hmm.
oh, no, we're replanting. But it was the year anniversary of a mudslide in Oso that an entire town was submerged in mud and land
mm-hmm.
from improperly logged and improperly replanted. And
mm-hmm.
those trees should not have come down in the first place. So
right.
point very, very well taken.
Yeah, that
very
if those
painful
trees
lesson.
Were not removed, they would have held that hillside
the soil,
in place.
The water, yeah.
Not only by the roots, but the canopy itself interrupts the raindrops and slows them down so that they don't hit the soil with such a hard force. And then all the roots and the organisms and the leaves and the fungi create like a spongy soil. So it's
just
the
even
difference
the moss.
Between
yeah.
pouring a tablespoon of water on your counter and pouring a tablespoon of water on a sponge.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've seen those patchworks in the national forests in Washington, and you know, I hope we've learned our lesson there and we're not cutting where we shouldn't anymore. And that's the other thing that we do, the Old Growth Forest Network, is to just create a group of people who will stick together to speak out for some of these threatened forests. So it gives me
that
joy.
Yeah, that's one. People get so overwhelmed with how they
mm-hmm.
can participate, and
mm-hmm.
they forget that it is actually just finding your area that needs attention.
Yeah.
And saving the rainforest is a very good thing, and I actually wanted to talk to you a little bit more about some of the science that they've discovered about how the trees as a forest is our oxygen, but the rainforest, it can be a little bit different. But the people can just find their own neighborhoods that need park cleanup and you're helping the forests and rooftop gardens and making, you know, landing pads for the birds and the bees. That's one of the things that has suffered. The bees are, their immune system has been under attack because there's not enough places for them to land.
Yeah, all, you know, all the organisms need wild places that are unsprayed. And so often when we manage a landscape, whether it's crops or, you know, even our yards, so many folks are using chemicals or herbicides or sprays. So it's very important to keep some of the land wild so that all the organisms will have clean places to be. And so you can do that if you're lucky enough to own some property. You can do that on your own property to make sure that some areas stay wild and without chemicals. And even if you don't own any property yourself, you can find an area to kind of adopt, be a friend of a forest somewhere in your community, and ideally with others, and say, together, we are going to stick together and have fun and put our energy together and make sure that this particular forest does not get removed or become just a place for fiber or become like a forest I'm trying to save right now in my community. They want to make it athletic fields, and I'm trying to convince them that a forest is better for the community than athletic fields because of our water quality in particular.
Yeah, and a better playground for a family to spend time in. If you're looking for something to do with your kids, that was some of my favorite things to do, was go outside, and even, like, you know, little tiny sticks became doll furniture and little forts, and it was endless being out there. Yeah.
And there's so much new research now showing how healthy it is for humans to be in the forest. In addition to the air quality, things that we don't even know why, our stress levels are reduced, our blood sugar levels are reduced. They're showing now that children with ADHD, ADD and ADHD that need to be on medications, they need fewer medications when they spend time in the forest. Something about the forest centers them and calms them. And in Japan, they're actually preserving forests as places where people can go for health reasons. And I think we could have something to learn from that.
Yeah, there's also research that's very similar about the effects of being in the bottom of a waterfall and letting that water that has misting up to breathe that in. If you have asthma, it can heal the lungs. And it sounds like from a scientific biology point of view, it's just the same kind of thing and all of that. But you did talk about some of the specifics, chemicals that old forests are passing around, and that, like, that fungi that you're getting in the air that you would be breathing in as well.
And many of those compounds, you know, each tree species produces slightly different chemicals and compounds. So when you have one of these native forests with all this diversity of species, you're going to have just this rich soup of wonderful, healthy chemicals. It's funny, the soup, it just came to mind. You know, if you just took a pot of water and you put some carrots and rice in it, it wouldn't taste like all that much. That's kind of our industrial forest. But if you take a pot of soup and put all kinds of herbs and vegetables and grains in it, it would taste much better. And it's the same way with our forests, is that diversity, that mixture makes
That is the absolute perfect analogy. That is absolutely the perfect analogy. You think about breathing in all that hot air, especially. It is lots better to have lots of different things in it. Yeah, I've had that carrot rice soup. That's not good.
So, so back to, you know, talking about what people can do in their communities. So with the Old Growth Forest Network, we are trying to be an umbrella to, or a web of light, a web, if you will, to hold all these forest lovers together and all these groups together and say, we can help each other and we can stand together and we can all, you know, have one voice, but your particular individual voice where you live is so important there. And that's something that I can't do, you know the issues happening in every neighborhood everywhere. And some people out there, Andrea, are working so hard and selflessly for us that we decided we should start giving people awards. And so we created something called the Forest Advocate Award that recognizes these very special people that are speaking out for the forest where they live.
That is a wonderful idea. When did you start that?
We just gave out our first awards last year. And so so far we've just given out three, and we're giving out another one in April. So,
wow.
And I have a wonderful volunteer person who does who turns wood that is just salvaged wood, you know, that has fallen down. He said he never buys wood, but if somebody has a tree that dies or something, he'll make these beautiful objects out of it, and that's what the awards are.
Wow. Keeping the essence of that tree going even still. And that's funny that you should mention that, because one of the things in the book that really touched me especially was people's struggle with the emotional overwhelming environment. Oh, my gosh. And isn't climate change a big yawn? Let's just talk about cleaning up the planet, not cutting down the trees in the first place.
Right.
It's stop polarizing that conversation, for heaven's sakes, and get back to the basics.
Yes,
yawn. Climate change. But it's
really
very frightening. It's so easy to polarize because people are so scared. And I think that psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, literally, the patient is not dead until the patient is not dead, until it is dead. And you talk about that in chapter what? But on page 75, I'm going to start just switch gears for just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But was my tree really dead? This question about whether the tree is really dead and how it grows, we're talking about something much deeper.
Yes. And so the two parts to that, to answer that, was my tree really dead? Well, for one thing, some of the roots that were in the ground sprouted up after that. This was a black locust tree, so it looked like the main tree had fallen over and it was gone, but those roots sprouted up. And so now I have in my yard some black locust trees with the exact same genetic material as that original tree. So in a way, you could say it's still alive. And many of the trees we have around us now, the main stem might be, you know, only 100 years old, but that genetic material has been in place on that stock, you know, in that spot for thousands of years. So if you destroy that area and build something there, you're destroying those unique genetics. And the other thing about when a tree dies and falls over, that actually becomes one of the ecologically richest parts of a tree's what they do for our planet, because so many things live on and in the trunks of the trees that have fallen to the ground. The fungi we're talking about, and the insects, and the reptiles and amphibians, and, you know, even mammals will hide in there. And it can take a tree as long to decompose as it took it to grow. And during that whole time, it's adding resources to that ecosystem. So to just cut down a tree and cart it away for fiber, we're removing half of what it can do for our ecosystem.
And it also asks more philosophical questions about, if that tree isn't dead, if it falls over and looks dead, people sort of ask, sort of like, it's like airy-fairy or parapsychology almost, if you're a tree hugger, you know, or trees, you think trees are alive. What's the alternative? Alive and death are, by definition, it is alive. And so when you ask people emotionally how they can get connected to the tree, and why people that you're giving these awards to would dedicate their lives, because these are alive beings, what is the alternative? Of course they're alive.
Yeah, yeah. And they can't speak out for their own protections. And so one thing we do have as a human species, you know, we may not be able to make our own food like the trees can, and we may not be able to live as long as some of the tree species can, but we do have a voice, and we can speak out for our own protection. And I like to use that voice also to speak out for the protection of the trees and just honor the people everywhere that are speaking out for other organisms that have no voice. And so we can be their voices. And so in my book, that's why I dedicated it to the humans everywhere that speak out for the living things that have no voice.
What are some of the projects that you're working on now? Is it just or do you have another book in the works?
Yes, I do. that one's going kind of slowly. And so many times when people will say, well, why are the old growth forests really important? Why should we preserve the old growth forests? And, of course, they're beautiful and magical, as we've talked about, and they clean the air. But what's the science behind that, really? Like, what's the proof? Some people react emotionally, and other people want proof. And so my next book is going to be for those that really want the scientific proof. So I'm digging back into the scientific literature and looking at questions like, are there different numbers of birds and types of birds in an old growth forest versus one that has been cut more recently? And, you know, the answer is yes. Are there different types of fungi in the soil? Is there a different richness of the fungi in the soil? And what about insects? And what about lichens? So on and on, just looking at the soil from every angle and looking at the scientific evidence. And what I'm finding is that so often people are told, oh, well, for a forest to be healthy, it needs to be managed. People hear that all the time. And what I'm finding out is that the healthiest forest in terms of biodiversity is an unmanaged forest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about two-thirds of the way through. You can imagine that one's going a little more slowly with the science. But then there's also going to be another book. I'm working with a photographer, Robert Llewellyn, who's based in Virginia, and he's done these wonderful books called Seeing Trees, where it's photo close-ups of trees and seeing seeds and seeing flowers, these beautiful photos, and he's going to do one called Seeing Forests, and I'm so honored to be asked to be the writer for that book, so that'll probably come out in 2017, but yes, working on that.
Gosh.
And besides those books, just expanding the Old Growth Forest Network. And in mid-April, I'll be on the road again, and I'll be going to North Carolina to give talks, and to West Virginia, putting forests in the network, to Ohio, giving talks and putting forests in the network, Western Maryland, Charlottesville, Virginia. So just meeting with tree lovers everywhere and sharing with them the thought that we're not just a network of forests, the old growth forest network, but also creating this network of people who care about forests. So
mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm weaving together this family of forest lovers across our country.
And I also think that people can start looking at trees in a different way, and not just in the forest, but I always wanted to know how trees who are either by themselves in cities or are in larger parks, like you have parks now in older cities that the trees have been together there for a while and created their own ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have trees that live in places like Disneyland,
mm-hmm.
and how they're
right.
creating, and do they live and they thrive and they seem to grow, how they are creating their Have you studied like different, like how trees and different groups mm-hmm. like that are managing to? I don't know.
Yes,
it just seems like that's a whole different
yeah.
field, but they're still
yeah.
a tree on a city uh-huh. street still grows.
Right. So that would be the urban trees, we call them. And the combined, if you looked at a whole city from the air and saw how much green was there versus how much pavement, that's called the urban tree canopy. And the urban tree canopy is very important also for air quality in the forest, for reducing energy costs in the building, and also, again, the psychological effects that we don't 100% understand. We know the data, but we don't know why. For instance, the earliest research of this kind showed that a patient in a hospital, if they saw green out the window, they healed faster and they needed less time in the hospital.
Wow.
And some of the latest I've heard is a statistic on miscarriages, that if a woman, the closer a woman lives to trees and sees trees every day, the less likely she is to have a miscarriage.
Wow.
Now, we don't really know. That could just be correlation. You know, the healthier mm-hmm. environments, maybe healthier air, healthy water, healthy food. Or it could be somehow directly related to the energy or psychology. We don't know, but we...
Or both.
Yeah,
it all
both.
Sounds
right.
true. It all sounds true. I also had a question about explain the difference between the importance of so many people have expectations of the rainforest and the importance of the rainforests versus the old growth forests.
Mm-hmm.
Explain a little bit the difference about between the two. Obvious, there are some obvious differences, but. Everybody thinks the rainforests are the most important thing to protect.
Yeah. Well, yes, it's so interesting. Even when I was in elementary school, you know, the talk was about, oh, the rainforest, we must save the rainforest. And I realized nobody was really talking about the forests in my state or my community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost that was, seemed to be a political choice, you know, a little edgy to talk about the forests in your community that are getting removed, but it's easy to talk about the forests in Brazil that are getting removed. And So the forests in the rainforest, very important. And you could also call them old growth forests or primary forests. So there's different names for the same thing. And here what we have in the U.S. is less than 5% left. But there, they have much more than 5% left. You know, they might have 50% of their land mass is still that original diverse native forest. And in our personal lifetimes, most of the primary forests in this country had already been removed. But we can see in our lifetimes the primary forest in South America and the rainforest still being removed and watch it diminishing and realize that this should not happen. And so stopping the removal of the primary forest is important in both places. I just happen to be a North American, and so I feel like this is where I can be most effective. But
yes.
Really,
and that's what
both are important.
That's one of the things that I can't stress enough. Is that it? Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing that you can do: protect the tree that's in front of you.
Yes,
very
yes.
difficult to protect the tree
urban...
that's thousands of miles away.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. You were talking about the urban tree canopy, and you know, I
yes.
know one woman that, you know, she saw these trees that were being cut down, and she thought, hey, I don't think they should be cutting there. I think that's an easement. I don't think this person has permission. And she literally threw herself in front of a tree and said, you know, you have to show me that you have permission to cut this tree before you can cut it. And she got arrested, and the case went to court, and she didn't get prosecuted. But it was determined that she was correct, that they were just taking those trees out of the easement, and they didn't have permission to do so. And those trees are still standing. And I hear those stories all the time where, whether it's the power company or a neighbor or somebody will say, oh, that tree's old, it's dying, or it's dangerous, or, you know, we're going to take it down. And somebody speaks up for that tree, and 50 years later, that tree is still standing and doing just fine. So each of us can do our part to save these particular trees, whether they're the ones in our yard or whether they're the ones in our neighborhood or, you know, ones further away.
And
I was going to say, if you can't, if you don't have trees in your yard at all, you're in a high rise and you can't do that directly, you can support the other people that are doing that with, you know, donations
or
in any way.
Your local park.
Mm-hmm.
Try and get trees planted in your where your kids have their playgrounds.
Yeah.
I have also the Walden Woods. I donated. It wasn't even a large donation. It was a really humble donation, and got a tree sampling of the Walden Woods and planted it out here, and it's still beautiful out in the Sammamish area. So that's another way that people can replant a tree and try and make a connection with trees and save them is find one that you can be emotionally attached to.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the coolest thing, was getting a Walden Woods tree.
Yeah, that is great. Or even, you know, for the opposite extreme, people might be listening that are fortunate enough to own forest land, and they've been told that, oh, the right thing to do is put it into production. And maybe those families have made that choice, and that's okay. We need some tree fiber, but I would encourage them to set aside some acreage, some corner, and not harvest that, you know, back 40, if you will, or that corner, and just spend time there and, develop that attachment with your forest in a different way. So many openings to developing a relationship with the trees and the forest.
Yeah. You're a picnic basket away from having one of the most amazing days of your life.
Yes.
That no amusement park could ever, no disrespect to the beautiful trees in the amusement parks, but you will just never find that that feeling. That exactly as you say, it is a feeling. And how many acres? We've got about just about 5 or 6 minutes left. How many acres of old growth are left in your area? Because you write that you didn't think there were any left, and you found a tract.
Mm-hmm. Well. You know, it's so there's little corners here and there, and it's like a never-ending mystery. I'll go out and give a talk, and people will say, oh, you know, did you know that this person back, you know, on their property, they have this older forest, and would you like to see it? And I always say yes, yes, yes. And even trying to keep track of what's left. In the eastern United States, we had no idea until the 1990s how much was left at all, until a woman named Mary Bird Davis decided to do a survey and collect all this information from these eastern states. And what she found was that although every state has some and there's little pieces everywhere, the total came to less than 1% of our original forest, and in some places it's a tenth of a percent.
Wow.
So if there are those small corners left that are old growth, we need to make sure that they remain and that they have things to teach us. You know, we can look at them and see what species would grow there together and what the structure of these old trees would look like. And so that I talked earlier about the science, and a lot of the scientists doing this work have said that it's challenging science, because just finding these places that are unlogged and untouched can be the hardest part of the research. So, but I think
what state is doing well?
Well, Northern California is one of the better states, because even though 98% of those large redwoods were removed, the redwoods that did remain got purchased by an organization, Save the Redwoods, so many of them, and given to the state park system, and the state parks have made a commitment not to log those forests, whereas in other states, the state parks can be logged. And mm-hmm. so we speak out for that, too. There's a lot of old growth still in North Carolina. In my book, I talk about particular large special forests. So any listeners that want to visit an eastern old growth forest, I would send them to Cook Forest in Pennsylvania, to the Porcupine Mountains in Michigan, to Sipsey Wilderness in Alabama. These are magical special places. Congaree in South Carolina. And, of course, you know, where you are, there's the Olympic Peninsula beautiful forests, too. So that's one way we can reconnect. You know, find one of these old growth forests, visit it, realize what these forests can be, and then, you know, commit yourself to protecting maybe a younger forest for the long term.
Yeah. No, trying to just make the connection that is going to give you the evidence that you can't read about.
Yeah.
You have to feel it for yourself. You can't listen and read about these things. You actually have to go and do it. It's kind of like meditating and mindfulness.
Yeah.
As often as you read about it, it doesn't work
right.
until you actually do
right.
it.
Right, yeah. You can read about what it feels like to take a sip of water all day long, but it's not the same as taking a sip of water. And that's the way of being in the presence of a tree, and they're slower, so we need to slow down in their presence. You know, lots of times maybe lay on your back under a tree and, you know, just meditate on that tree and, you know, listen to what it's trying to teach and share your commitment, love, and energy back. That's the most fun.
Yeah. Well, what is your favorite tree? Do you have a favorite? Is that like trying to pick one of your favorite
changes.
Kids?
Yes, I know. It changes all the time. I love tulip poplars. Some people call them tulip trees. I love beech trees. I love ponderosa pines. I love Doug firs. I love big leaf maples. You know, they're sycamores. So I don't have just one favorite. Western red cedars.
And the
different
sounds.
Do you have a favorite?
Yes. I don't. And I even though the weeping willow always comes to mind because of the way it moves when it's in full bloom on a summer day. It's just like stunning.
Yes.
But there have just been sort of specific trees. I was at the Boise, Idaho airport and had a tree conversation that I'm also going to be writing a book about my experience with this tree, because it gave me the idea for the book and about how to, from the perspective of trees, how do the trees feel about being out in these places that are not forests? And the tree was laughing. I heard the tree laughing, and I've never... You hear the tree leaves blowing, and sometimes when you're quiet, you can hear more than just leaves blowing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I recently got to visit a 1,000-year-old coast live oak tree that is protected by the Pechanga Native people, and this is in Southern California. If you want to see a picture of it, it's on my blog. So it's Jones.
What city in Southern California?
It's in Temecula, California. And it is amazing, this tree. I have a picture of it on the blog. The blog is called For the Earth, and it's on Blogspot. And after I visited that tree, I just got this sense of, it was saying to me, potential, you know, that any coast live oak has the potential to be like me. And then I started hiking down this Santa Margarita River Wildway, and I'd see these amazing oak trees, and I realized that in a way they're connected to that they call it the great oak, and that each one of these trees, if we don't cut it down before its time, could be something that's so ancient and so honored. And I thought it was interesting because the person that took me to it and let and shared that tree with me, said, "We have this tree protected by a fence and it's locked away, but it needs people too. Just like we need to see and experience these trees, they believe that the trees get energy from our appreciation.
From us." Mm-hmm. Yes, and the circle is complete, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joan, we are almost out of time. This has gone so quick, and I thank you so, so much. I learned so much from your book. I really connected with it in so many ways. Thank you.
Oh, my ultimate pleasure. I'm so glad that we got to connect, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, everyone, so much for joining us. This has been a wonderful conversation, and definitely check out Teaching the Trees and the other Among the Ancients. Joan, have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.